All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, Nicks? What the fuck, buddies? What the fuckadelics? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Thanks for being here. How's it going? I should be in Vermont as I'm saying this, so let's pretend like I am. I did record it yesterday, but I'm here in Vermont today, where if everything went as planned, I should be waking up in Vermont, and you're waking up wherever you are, or you're at work already. Whatever the case, that's what's happening. I actually am not really in Vermont. I'm at home recording this the morning before, yesterday morning. Perry Farrell's on the show today from Jane's Addiction and from Porno for Pyros and from Perry Farrellism. Perry Farrell's here today. He's got a lot going on. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but he's got a lot going on. Oh, yeah. Well, he does have his first solo album in 18 years, Kind Heaven. That's available tomorrow, June 7th. It's a good record. It's a Perry Farrell record. That's what he's got going on. But that isn't all, folks. That is not all. There's a lot going on around Perry Farrell and inside Perry Farrell, and you will get a sense of that shortly. So, information. I have information. Hold on. I'm going to tell you. Here's some information that you've been waiting for. Toronto, I will be part of the Just for Laughs 42 in Toronto. I will be performing in Toronto on September 19th. I'll be at JFL 42 in Toronto, Canada. Now, here's what's happening today. They have a pre-sale today, Thursday, June 6th. It started at 10 a.m. I don't know when you're listening to this. And it goes till Friday. At 10 a.m. And you can go to the link on my site, or you can go to jfl42.com. The password is 42 comics for that pre-sale. All right, there you go. Toronto, September 19th for the JFL Festival. I have some other information on my phone. Okay, here we go. This is direct from the director. I have been told that the film I made with Lynn Shelton called Sword of Trust is going to be screening in Dallas, Texas on June 9th at the Oak Cliff Film Festival, and on June 14th and June 16th at the Provincetown Film Festival in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Okay? So that's exciting. All right. Those will be happening. And I'm in Vermont tonight in Burlington. I'm here already. We're hoping. Those shows are sold out. And hopefully by the time you're hearing this, I've downloaded the Turo app and I'm driving someone else's car. I got some serious shit to talk to you about. I wanted this is important. I want to let you know this because it's important. It's important for podcasters and it's important for creative people of all kinds. If you listen to the 1000th episode, or if you've been a listener going back, like 5 or 6 years, you probably heard me talk a lot about the patent troll that was terrorizing us. It was a big deal. It was a horrendous time. This guy tried to shake down podcasters, big and small, for licensing fees, and he basically would have put us all out of business if he had pulled off his scheme. So we got the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, involved, and they challenged the podcasting patent in the patent office and in the courts, and it worked. The EFF beat the patent in court. But now we got new problems. Patent trolls are looking to get their way by using Congress. They're working with lobbyists on a bill that would destroy parts of the U.S. Patent Act and put podcasters and other creators at risk. Do you hear me? This is serious shit. So here's what you can do. You can tell Congress that this is a bad idea. They need to hear from you. They need to hear from creatives. They need to hear from podcasters. And the EFF is making it easy for you to speak up loud and clear. Go to EFF.org/WTF patents and use the form there to email your elected representatives. Tell Congress that more bad patents won't help anyone except these shakedown artists. All right? These thugs, internet thugs. That's EFF.org/WTF patents. All right, we can't let this happen again. So let's hold the line on this, people. Can we? Thank you. It's important, man. It's just, it's predatory, it's bullshit. Anyways, I can obsess about that. So, look, I don't know how your brain works. I want to thank everybody for the emails. You know, I wasn't looking for any sort of sympathy or you know, I just wanted you to know what was up, so you weren't sitting there thinking like, oh, Mark's tone sounds a little weird or whatever. So that's that. And because I have a lot going on emotionally, you know, I choose to, I don't know, when the world gets too big to handle, make it small. So I've been obsessing about the ice maker in my refrigerator. I don't know what you've been focusing on. God knows there are bigger problems. Thank God I'm healthy. I'm grateful for my success in life and in the world. I try to feel that. But what I'm realizing is that, you know, even if everything's going okay for you, if you have something in your heart, if there is a nagging sadness, sitting with that is hard, you know, not to make it kind of turn into something else. You know, how do I make these feelings of grief or maybe completely appropriate sad feelings into, why not just kind of mold that a little bit into self-pity, or why not mold it into self-righteousness, or why not just kind of twist it into anger and push it out into the world? I don't know about you, man, but I'd rather be angry than sad. And they, you know, they come from this. They come from the same place. I think, the well, you know, the fear well, whatever that well is. If I can just twist sadness into anger, it's a lot more relieving for me. But then you're just putting more anger out into the world, and you're causing more bad vibes. So feel the sadness, move through it, and if you're going to get angry, make it at an inanimate object. I personally have been, as I said, really dealing with the ice machine. Is it necessary? No. Did I pay a lot of money to fix the ice machine in the refrigerator that came with this house? I did. Is it working now? No, it's not. Did I call the people that were supposed to fix it completely after I paid the money to fix it? I did. Did they tell me it's not their problem anymore, that I need to call a plumber? They did. Isn't it still kind of their problem? Do I sense that maybe the reason they don't want to fix it is because this giant refrigerator doesn't have wheels and it would be a real pain in the ass to pull out and then figure out what's going on in terms of how much water the ice machine's supposed to be getting and what it seems to be getting, even though it was getting the right amount of water before the ice machine broke? Is it still their issue? Theoretically, in my mind, it is. Am I sort of at a standstill with this? I am. Do I have to call the plumber? I do. Is there a way that we're going to be able to move that fucking refrigerator? Don't know. I'm sure there's a way. But then it goes from there, like, you know, why me? Why me? Why has this got to happen to me? The thing was working, and then we tried two ways to fix it. We replaced it. We put in a new valve, still not working. How come that? Does that happen to everybody? Why am I the guy sitting here with nowhere to go but the plumber? When the guy who's supposed to fix the fridge. See, now, like, these are luxury problems. Is it worthy of taking up most of my brain? No. Should I just let it go and deal with it one day at a time and not even bother you guys with it? I should. Is it filling in for some other sadness and other feelings? It is. Is that okay? Sure. Is it better than getting mad at people for no reason? Yes. Should I let it go, though, and use my brain creatively and just accept that I'll get it fixed when I fix it? I should. St. Louis next week. I told you about Toronto. There's a lot of other dates at WTFpod.com/tour. So, Perry Farrell. People come up and I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll talk to him. And it was kind of a wild ride. This Perry Farrell situation. God damn my fucking brain. Oh, my God. So Perry has got a new record out. It's actually his first solo album in 18 years. It's called Kind Heaven. It is available tomorrow, June 7th. Get it wherever you get music. And this is me and Perry. So strap in. I had to, so now you gotta. Okay, this is me and Perry Farrell. Where'd you come in from?
We live out in Santa Monica Canyon, very close to a forest, right off the beach.
Yeah.
Right off the beach there.
Have you always lived there? How long you lived there?
Oh, I would say maybe 10 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, for me, I can't beat it because I like to walk around outside.
Yeah.
I like to go down to the beach. I like to be in forests.
Yeah.
So I get to walk my dogs or myself.
Just out and around?
All over the place.
Yeah.
I need a nice environment.
Yeah. And there's, yeah. How close is the closest neighbor?
The neighbors are not far apart from me.
Yeah.
But you see, there's an underwater river.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people know this about that area, but there's an underwater river, and it was a forest, and it was the first. Los Angeles Forestry used to be located right in that area.
Yeah.
Because they had, and they would do these experiments, bringing trees from all over to see if they could grow.
Here.
Yeah, here in that area.
Yeah.
So you've got redwoods and pines and crazy.
So now the experiment is taking full bloom, and you've got a bunch of odd trees there.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, I love big trees.
But you didn't, like, you come, where do you come from?
I was born on the East Coast.
Where?
So my family's out of Bensonhurst.
Yeah, in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And you grew up there?
No, my father grew up there and my mother grew up there. And my grandparents lived there.
Yeah.
And then my father bought a home in Queens, Flushing.
Oh, yeah. I lived in Queens for a few years.
You did?
Yeah, in Astoria. Flushing, sure.
Flushing. So we were, you know, near the World's Fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever I see the big globe.
Yeah.
When I come back to New York.
It's like, I remember.
Then I start seeing that. And then I was born in Jamaica Hospital. So I see my hospital.
Right.
On the drive-in. And yeah. I always point it out and tell people that's where I was born.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. Like, wow. It actually happened because I'm standing here. But right. I have no knowledge of it.
Yeah.
And but that the action was right there.
In like, that place.
I could pull over, get off the freeway, get in there and start asking some questions. But
sure.
I don't know what that would get me.
Yeah, which room was I born in?
Yeah, can I see my records?
You could probably see your records.
They might tell me what room I was born in,
of
right?
Of course, yeah, maybe.
They would?
Yeah.
And maybe it's still there, that room, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, cause it's a pretty old hospital. They might have added on some things.
I wouldn't mind getting a plaque.
Yeah, oh, yeah. There's a Perry Farrell, and they'd have to put your real name in parentheses.
Peretz Bernstein, Berenstrasen, Peretz Berenstrasen.
Berenstrasen?
Berenstrasen.
Peretz, what's that? What was the English translation?
Perry Bernstein.
You're a Bernstein.
Yep.
From a long line of Bernsteins.
Yep.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do.
Yeah?
I have...
Are they still Bernsteins?
Farrell, my big brother,
yeah,
is still.
Uh-huh.
And then I took my name, Perry Farrell,
yeah,
from my big brother, Farrell.
Wait, oh, that's his first name?
His first name's...
Farrell Bernstein?
Favel.
Favel Bernstein?
Yeah.
How Jewish were you?
I'm as Jewish as I was right now, man. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, like, you're growing up in Flushing. You're from Bernstein's. You're from the Bernsteins of Brooklyn.
Yeah, we don't fuck around.
Yeah. Was it religious?
You know, the grandparents,
yeah,
for sure. So I don't know an awful, awful lot, you know. So
About
I will just tell you in general what I know about the Jewish people in 1940, 1930.
Yeah.
They were sticking together.
Sure.
You know, and they were in this country, and they had these clubs. They were, you know, clubs that, you know, the type of person you were.
Yeah.
They had a club for that. The,
yeah,
Italians had a club.
Sure. Jewish club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was Jewish clubs, and my dad loved to dance.
Yeah.
That's what they, like the young guys, the,
yeah,
zoot suiters. My,
sure,
dad was a zoot suiter.
Oh, yeah. He liked the big band.
He liked the big band.
Big band sound.
He always, you know, would boast he was a really good dancer.
Sure.
So.
Is he still around?
No.
What about your mom?
So my mom was an artist, and they fell in love right at the war.
Yeah.
My father went off and served in World War II on the island of Hawaii.
Yeah.
On Oahu. he was stationed, and my mom went to work for a parachute company that made parachutes on the East Coast.
For the war effort.
For the war effort. And then what she did was she would bring home the fabrics that were cut onto the floor.
Oh, wow.
And she would make dresses.
Really? Out of parachute
amongst
fabric?
Other things, yes.
Ahead of the curve.
She made her wedding dress out of parachute.
Really?
Yeah, it's beautiful, too.
You still have it?
I have a picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Oh.
But I'd like to remake it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For yourself?
I don't think I could rock it, but my wife could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she was a fashion artist?
She was an artist. She did a lot of different things.
Yeah.
She could paint. She really liked to put things back together.
Uh-huh.
That was her forte. So,
did you know her?
For a little while. For about 3.5 years.
And she passed away?
Yeah. She passed away in like 61, 62. Awful times in the world in general because Kennedy was assassinated and Martin Luther King. All that happened like in a succession. My mom left. John F. Kennedy left. Martin Luther King left. Then Robert Kennedy left.
Yeah.
And man, it was like one blow after another to humanity.
Yeah.
All these great people that, admired anyway.
Yeah.
Were disappearing.
We were very young though.
But I was very young.
But I mean, I think about that too because I was born in '63, like a couple months before Kennedy got assassinated. And you got to figure, you know, on some kind of frequency level, you're taking that in, right?
You're taking it all in, man.
Yeah.
Anybody who's living is taking it in, and it's affecting us all.
So did you go, you spent your whole childhood in Queens?
Well, no. Then soon after that, I went to a place called Woodmere, Long Island.
Oh, yeah, I got relatives. Is that one of the five towns?
Yep. See, my father worked in the city as a jeweler. He was a designer, repairman, and he had a booth in the city, West 47th.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to be close
where the jewelry,
by.
Where the jewelers are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what he did?
So that's what he did.
Were you bar mitzvahed?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
He did the whole thing.
Yeah, I have a, as you know, I have a really good voice.
Yeah,
I had it back then too, because I can remember nailing. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah?
Yeah, man, because any chance to sing, and that was really interesting. I had this cantor, his name was Cantor Wax.
Mm-hmm.
He's friends with Stewie Wax, do you know him?
No, who's Stewie Wax?
He's out here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
He might be a rabbi,
uh-huh.
but his father was the cantor.
Yeah.
In on the East
Woodmere.
Coast, out in Woodmere.
Yeah.
And he's a great singer.
Yeah.
Actually got a recording of him, too.
Of your cantor.
That I used to DJ. Sometimes I'd run it through a delay. And I'd drop drum and bass under it, and it sounded awesome.
Of your cantor?
Yeah.
Did he know?
Stewie knew.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And Stewie's his kid?
Yeah, Stewie's his kid.
So is that when you officially?
I don't know if he's alive. That guy.
Who, the old man?
Cantor Wax.
Yeah, but his kid's still around.
His kid is thriving out here in L.A.
That's great.
Yeah.
So is that when you first started singing? You think?
Me?
Yeah.
No. When I was a little boy.
Yeah.
My big brother and my big sister, they were old enough to love the British invasion.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, the Beatles and the Stones, and then, of course, came Jimi Hendrix and the Doors, the Who and all that.
Yeah.
My brother was like a freak.
Yeah.
Long-haired freak.
But not a hippie, just a freak.
He became later an outlaw biker.
Oh, he did? Really?
And he's still to this day. He's quit his gang because he's now 72,
uh-huh,
something like that.
Yeah.
And
which club was he in?
He was in a biker club out of New York.
Yeah. The Angels?
Not the Angels, but they got along.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And he retired.
Well, one of his wife's father was an angel.
Yeah.
So I know that he got along with the Angels for a time, but you know how those things go.
Sure, man. So he retired from the biking?
Well, yeah. So now he's 72, and he moved down to Tampa. There's a biker community down there.
Oh, yeah? An old biker community?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of New York bikers go down there, just like, you know, the migration from New York to Miami. Well, the bikers, they migrate from New York to Tampa.
And they all live around the same area?
They all live around. They ride together. The problem is, 72-year-old, and, you know, it's like this in the jewelry business. Yeah. As you get older, your clientele starts dying.
Right.
So it gets tougher and tougher to sell jewelry because, you know, jewelry's for the young, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with anything, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
If you got a market and they all of a sudden get old and they don't need your services anymore. So music's the same fucking way, man.
Or they're dead.
Dead, sure.
Yeah, a lot of them are dead.
But your brother, he's just hanging around with like-minded dudes down there.
Yeah.
You guys get along?
Well, yeah, we do.
Yeah, that's nice. To get along with your
sibling? Yeah, I look up to my big brother. I always have. That's why I took his name.
And then, but you were talking about that was the music in the house, about starting to sing.
Yeah. So, man, I was feeling so bad. That song would hit the girl. Good love. Yeah. Give me that good love, you know?
Yeah.
The whole house would explode.
Yeah.
And we would all sing.
Yeah.
And then when we went to camp, not my brother, but my sister and I went to this camp, you know, like in the summer.
Yeah.
In New York, upstate New York.
Sure.
They asked me, there was things like color war.
Yeah.
Did you ever go to camp?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great experience.
Sure, man. I went to a few.
Especially for people that like to entertain.
Yeah.
It was my first experience as an entertainer, as an athlete.
Yeah.
As, you know, feeling up girls.
Yeah.
I could still remember that.
It's a big day.
Yeah. Off the basketball court.
Oh, yeah?
In the dark. Yeah. I walked my girlfriend out, and the basketball court was kind of set up on a... you know, they had dug a lot of mound, and they put the basketball court up on the mound. So it had a little slope off the basketball court with nice grass.
Yeah.
So I just laid her in the grass right there and started to feel her up.
Yeah. What are you, like 14?
No.
13? 12.
No. Yeah. Something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
11s and 12s. Yeah. Like sixth grade.
Yeah. Sixth and seventh. That's when the boobs started to enter the hands.
Come out, right?
Yeah. I went to an arts and music camp, actually, and I think that's true. It's the first time you get a chance to sort of like explore your talent.
So check this out. I was so young, I had a song that I had written when I was a little boy.
Yeah.
That my sister and I, we would make songs up.
Yeah.
The song goes, it's called Alabuni.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, but it's in a different language. That was my first song. I can sing it for you if you'd like.
Is it a nonsense song?
I'll sing it for you if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do it. Alabuni.
It just goes, Alabuni, 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 Boonie, Boonie, Rats and Nudie, Nudie, Nudie.
Why didn't James ever record that?
Well, I was famous for it in the sleepaway camp.
Alabuni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would make me get up and sing it.
Yeah.
When Color War broke out,
yeah,
the whole side of my team, which is like, there's basically what Color War is there's two, you're in a summer camp for, I don't know, it seems like 2 months, but it's probably 1 month.
Yeah.
You go up there, you get to know counselors, other kids you've never met before,
sure,
play sports.
Yeah.
And there's also theater.
Yeah.
So there's a stage, you put on plays.
Yeah.
I was often asked to sing, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So it was like theater.
Sure.
Only thing I didn't like is crazy.
What?
I was really skinny.
Yeah. You're still pretty skinny.
I'm pretty skinny still.
Yeah.
I didn't like cold water, like the lake.
Yeah.
Bugged me out.
Just because it was
freezing. Yeah. So I often had a cold.
Yeah. But you were the singer.
But I was a really good singer, good basketball player.
Yeah.
And the chicks.
Yeah. You did all right.
I did all right with the chicks. I ended up to go to sleepaway camp. I know this girl set it up. Unbeknownst to me, my girlfriend in school ended up at my camp. You see how that crafty girls are?
Yeah. There you, was it Jewish camp?
Yeah.
When did you come out here? Did you go to high school in Long Island, or what did you do?
So I went to junior high school, got bar mitzvahed up there. I went at the Sands Hotel.
Yeah?
Yeah. And then my family left and migrated down to North Miami Beach, Florida.
There you go.
So you're just outside of Miami Beach.
Yeah. That's a whole different world, man.
Yeah, but it's a great place to grow up as a young person because as a young person, there's all these vacant lots.
Yeah.
You can turn into dirt bike tracks.
Sure.
And this is my first experience with marijuana.
Yeah.
I grew marijuana in these, you know, vacant lots out there.
Yeah.
And then we would go every day to visit the marijuana plants, you know. I smoked it out there in the jungle.
Was it good?
Yeah, and there's all these houses being built, right?
Yeah.
Back then, you ever heard the expression Acapulco gold?
Yeah.
Panama red?
Sure.
These are early descriptions of the
types
styles
of pot.
And types of marijuana that was going around
Thai stick.
In the 70s.
Maui,
Wowie.
Yeah.
And so it was sensational going to high school. I went to junior high for maybe a year and then went right into high school down in North Miami Beach, Florida. And until, I graduated, but I didn't go to graduation.
Yeah, while you were?
I ended up to take a bus out to California.
Right when you graduated?
Yeah, like I didn't go to the ceremony, but I was told that I graduated.
So what was the impulsive move?
Oh, I wanted to get the hell away from my family. and my situation in Florida.
What was that?
Oh, you know, well, we were talking about this earlier. My wife and I were having a discussion on your porch about how our son right now hates her and hates me. And I said, well,
how old is he?
He's going to be 17.
Right.
And I stopped her. I said, no, I don't think he doesn't hate us. But I do remember calling my father out on the front lawn and, you know, threatening to have a pistol duel.
Oh, yeah?
On the front lawn. Yeah.
Did you have a pistol?
He had it.
Oh, okay. So he's going to just give it to you to have the duel?
No, but I knew where it was.
Yeah. So you was not
he had
going.
He had a lot of guns.
Sure.
My dad, as a jeweler, you're carrying, you're bringing home jewels, you're bringing home, you carry a gun. He had a permit to carry a gun.
Yeah.
So he always had a hand pistol in his gun.
So you
in his bag. He had like a handbag with gems and a pistol.
And he didn't take you up on it, on the duel?
No, he backed down. And I'd probably back down if my son asked me to do it. I think it's the right thing to do as a father.
What were you so pissed off about?
Well, I'll be honest with you. My dad, this is what I'm telling you, man. The business, the jewelry business, as you get older, your clientele starts to go away.
Right.
So you look for other ways to make money. So now I tell you, my dad, he comes out of Bensonhurst. There were some rough characters out of Bensonhurst.
Sure.
And so it was typical. My father went to high school with the Lansky brothers.
Sure. So as in Meyer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was typical for fellows in that era to go outside the law and do what they needed to do. So as a result, as everybody knows, there were Jewish gangsters, Italian gangsters, Irish gangsters, black gangsters, Mexican gangsters, Chinese gangsters. You know, everybody's got a side and they've got a gangster element to their tribe. It's there. It's a little bit protection. It's it touches on glamour. It goes into the music business. It helps the music business to be glamorous and dangerous.
And your old man got involved with the mob?
My dad was always in touch with that element.
Right.
But, you know, he wasn't he never, as far as I know, he never swore a blood oath.
Right.
But grew up around those guys because they would hang out at my dad's shop.
Sure.
And they would, you know, just do what they do, hanging out.
Yeah, and you had a problem with that?
It was honestly a big problem of my family.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's what you had to get away from?
Yeah, my dad was behaving extremely erratic because he was getting desperate and he was getting older. So now you got this mob element coming in and it's quickly engulfing my family. So my dad didn't know how to, honestly, he didn't know how to keep them, push him back.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was a young guy and I was kind of like, fuck these guys. You know, they'd be asking me, hey, kid, polish my ring.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, what do you want? I'll get you anything you want. I'm a surfer. Oh, yeah, I got a warehouse of surfboards.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you want? I got any board you want. Okay, I want a silver surfboard, pintail, 6'4" to 6'6". Fuck off.
They didn't get it for you?
No, obviously not.
So that was your trip. You were surfing, and you're dealing
with these. I was surfing, and I was trying.
These wise guys were hanging around.
And I was becoming a young man, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So you know what I ended up wanting to do?
What?
Because my dad, when I was a really young man, used to drag me into work.
Yeah.
So now, these guys are kind of taking over, kind of a sagging business. I'm watching it, but I'm too young to understand that I gotta honestly be there to help my dad, because my dad was too proud to say, hey, I don't know what to do. Like, he couldn't say that to me.
Yeah.
Because I looked up to my dad like he was my hero.
The big shot.
He was so tough.
Yeah.
So he said, what ended up happening, Mark, honestly, was my dad told me, I'm hanging on to your life savings. And when you graduate, I'll give it to you. I was planning to go, you'll dig this. I was planning to take a surf trip with my buddies to a place called El Salvador. Unfortunately for us, this was 1973, 72, something like that. I was about to graduate. Civil War.
Yeah.
The Civil War of El Salvador. Now, as a surfer and as a daring surfer, I still wanted to go.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have my family, my parents. I had a stepmother. Couldn't give a shit about me. My father was in over his head in his life. I wanted to go there anyway, but my surf buddy's parents would not let them go.
Right, to the war in El Salvador.
I figured we'll be safe. We're only surfers. They'll figure that out.
That was probably naive.
And we really wanted to go because we had heard that this break was unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to give up on that dream. That's why I said, listen, man, I want to take a surf trip. I want my money, and then I'll come back and we'll get started and I'll join the family business. And my dad, this is tragic, man. He said, I don't have any of your money.
That was it.
That was it.
Yeah. And you're like, fuck this.
That was it. My life savings. I've been working for my dad through high school. So, you know, he had a grip on the purse strings. That's frustrating for a young man who's like, I want to go out and I need some money.
Yeah.
I worked for you for like the last, whatever, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Nothing. I don't want to keep this up. I don't want to keep asking you for money.
Yeah.
Just put me on a budget, you know? Let me take a little bit every now and then.
Nope.
But it was building up, building up. So now I'm dealing with a kid who's 17. And I do see where he's coming from, you know?
What, he's like telling you to fuck off?
In so many words, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's got a real attitude, man, but he's an artist.
Yeah. What's his trip?
What's his trip, or what does he like to do as an artist?
Yeah.
What he likes to do as an artist, he's a graphic artist for now. And he's really a real, word I'm looking for, provocative. Like, he draws really provocative shit.
Yeah.
Like he drew something and looked like a real frustrated person and it said, I want to kill myself.
Mm.
So I went, okay, I got to talk to him about this.
Yeah.
And I thought, dear God, I have a problem, a real serious problem with my son. This is bad indication. I went up to him and I said, by the way, we have an ongoing thing where I say to him, come up with a t-shirt that I could print.
Sell on the road?
Yeah, sell at Lollapalooza, sell on the road, sell at my, you know, the next place. So he's very reluctant to, like, he wants to be his own person. He's got a very strong personality himself. He doesn't really want people to know he's my son.
Right.
It's almost that bad because he doesn't want people to like him because of his dad.
Right, right. And it's, you know, those people are out there.
And he's bright enough to know that.
Yeah.
So he doesn't make a big deal of it. He never raises my name or the family name. And he likes to operate, as he told me, when he was in third grade.
Yeah.
I went to see him in the schoolyard because it was his first day at school. And I went back after I dropped him off. I went back at lunch just to see, because he had just come back from Hong Kong. We lived for a few years in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So he was coming back to the country. I was putting him in school in Los Angeles from Hong Kong. He'd spent 2 years.
Your wife is Chinese?
Yeah, she's from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So I was nervous. Hezron, I dropped him off at the schoolhouse. I came back at lunch and he's running around. And I said, hey, Hez, how you doing, man? He says, I'm fine. I go, whoa, that's cool. I just wanted to see how you were. He goes, don't worry, Dad. I like to operate alone. And he ran off.
That's third grade.
Yeah.
So how did you handle the suicide thing?
Okay, so I said to him, this is cool for a t-shirt. I can't put this on a t-shirt. Do you really want to kill yourself? And he said, at the time I did, I was at school and the teacher was so fucking boring, I wanted to kill myself. So I ran, okay, great, I can work with this. If you just write, this teacher is so fucking boring, I want to kill myself, with the rest of it, I almost like it a lot, you know? And he goes, no.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not even going to bend for you.
Yeah.
Like, you can't meet me halfway in the middle. I simply cannot print, I want to kill myself on a shirt. Bad messaging.
Yeah.
But this teacher's so fucking boring. I want to kill myself.
It's different.
Is different.
But you're doing okay as a dad.
You know, I think that I'm doing well in that I never stop loving my children.
You got three?
Even if he hates me for the moment, it's not a hate. That's what I told my wife.
Yeah.
It's not a hate. It's something else because he can't possibly hate me. I've done nothing to deserve hatred.
Yeah, other than just be, you know, just a period they go through.
Yeah, so this is the period they go through. So, and I was angst. I had full-on angst against my dad. Now, there was a lot made a combustible situation. This is not that with my son.
Sure.
But it is combustible in another way in that my wife and I are like Desi and Lucille Ball, right? Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball. We met, she was a dancer. I took her out on the road with me. I am a band leader.
Yeah.
So he lives in that environment. And I think I might have, if I did anything wrong, I tried to expose him to the road because we were working. I mean, she literally had her children on her tits.
Yeah.
And then she'd run out there and do a number.
Right.
And go back. And
for which band was this?
Jane's Addiction.
Oh yeah, so they were really living it.
They were living it, but as a result, I think I jolted them a little too early, and now he doesn't really like touring. So that's where we get in our fight. Hey man, you want to go to the Galapagos Islands? No. Why wouldn't you? Because I'm going to miss tests, and then my grades are going to drop. okay, well, that's a good excuse.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really argue with that.
Got to honor that one, yeah.
But I still insisted that he go because it was my 60th birthday.
And he went?
Yes,
and he went?
He did, but he was difficult initially.
Yeah.
He wouldn't go onto the islands, and he wouldn't snorkel. Uh-huh. He wouldn't leave his room. He wouldn't eat. And that went on for...
the whole time?
I'll be honest. It went on for almost 3 days. But then he admitted that when we left, he went upstairs and ate the peanuts. And I think he asked them for something because the crew was concerned initially. He was just trying to make the point. And he's got a real strong... a real strong temper in that if he doesn't want to do something, he doesn't explode and get violent. He will just become concrete.
Lockdown.
And then he will become granite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's an admirable trait. The first time I try to spank him,
yeah.
The one and only time I try to spank, you know, yeah. I didn't know better. I thought that a certain time in a child's life, it's very early.
Yeah.
You give them what is known as a pachki.
Yeah.
On the ass.
A pachki. A pachki on the tuchus?
Yeah. When they don't want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
It was that moment. Yeah. And I took this kid in a room. I'm like, all right, man, you and me, I'm going to smack you in the ass. And I did. And he would stiffen up and look me in the eye and he wouldn't cry. And that went on for, I'm not kidding, I feel bad about it, about a half an hour. And it got a little stronger each time. And then the last time, it was red, and I felt, oh, this, I'm fucking, ugh. I'm disgusted by this whole thing.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't cry, so I give up, and he won.
No more pachkis.
No, I never did it again.
So what about the other kid? You got two other ones?
Then my other son, Isidore,
these family names?
Yeah, Hezron.
Yeah.
Hezron means a small village.
Yeah.
It's in the Book of Ruth.
Yeah.
A small village is a good start, right?
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
So he is like that. He's a pillar.
Yeah.
Hezron.
Yeah, and Isidore is the other one.
And then Isidore, his younger brother, is very animated. And he's got great balance,
yeah.
And loves skateboarding and gaming.
Do you call him Izzy?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you have another kid?
I do.
Yeah. No,
but I don't see that child.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, me too. Not with Etty and I.
Right.
Etty and I, these are my two.
Right. Now I get, yeah, from another relationship.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll come around.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're open to it.
Yeah.
So when you came out here to Los Angeles, you didn't set out to be in a band, did you?
Well, the leap, as I told you, came from frustration.
Yeah.
I was somewhat desperate coming out here to California. I knew one person. I took a Greyhound that let me off in Riverside. And that place
Riverside?
Is, yeah.
It's a little far.
Yeah, that was as far as it took me.
Yeah.
And it dropped me off at the bus station. I had a surfboard. I had some art supplies. I had weed. And I had a little bit of money. And so I came out here thinking, I'm going to stay with my surfing buddy, Jim.
Yeah.
He was playing football in San Jacinto Junior College. In Hemet,
yeah.
California. It's the first place I lived. Hemet.
Yeah.
You believe that?
Yeah.
So Hemet is, for those of you who don't know where it is, you know where Coachella is. It's even past Coachella.
Yeah. Out in the desert.
It's in the high desert where it gets in the hundreds.
Yeah.
And I worked as a framer. I was a carpenter.
Yeah.
And framed houses, lifted lumber. You know, did what you call it, retail.
Yeah.
Retail things and track homes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Hemet.
Roofed. I was a roofer.
Yeah.
In Hemet. Yeah. It's hot as hell out there.
Yeah. So then how do you get from Hemet to rock and roll?
Oh. Yeah, man. You know, that leap, I'll tell you, I crashed. I was out there and I had to leave. I was getting sucked into this crew. They were a construction crew.
Mm-hmm.
So I was part of this team. You know, they were the one who talked me in, get your framer's belt. We'll go from job to job.
Yeah.
Get all your tools.
Yeah.
And I was doing it for a while. And then I started saying to myself, you know, I won't say the fellow's name because I'm not mad at him, but the crew chief, this guy, he's a drunk. We were drinking, you know, you get a 12-pack after work when you're framing.
Sure.
And get a 12-pack, get a bad back, and you're thinking to yourself, I don't think I want to do this in Hemet for my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
And if I don't get out of here real soon, they're starting to depend on me. And so they were going to all kick my ass.
Yeah.
I was going to get my ass beat to hell in Hemet.
Yeah.
They had taken my artwork from my apartment and were holding it ransom on my art.
For you
artwork.
To stay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
Yeah.
And they had whipped themselves up in a lather. Let's go back. Let's go over there and kick his ass. The last night I was there, I was with Jim and two girls. And man, I'm telling you, we were fucking away. These guys were going to kick my ass. They came to the door. And then Jim got the football team. This is a true story.
Yeah.
His best, you know, our best buddies off the team.
Yeah.
Stood up against those guys and they squat, you know, they walked off. They couldn't deal with the football team. But that was my buddy Jim. Jim Mullally, he passed, but he was one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
So I have better stories to tell you.
So let's go, because
talk about the current, like the future.
Yeah, no, I want to. I don't have any problem completely not talking about the arc of Jane's addiction, but
you can talk about the Jane's addiction. Sure, man, they're exciting.
Well, I mean, it's just those records are just, and all the records are like really kind of mind blowing. But I just remember hearing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love them. I still listen to the first record
a
lot.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's
the first record.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I listen to the shit out of that record.
Yeah, that's
to
a
this
good one.
Day. But like, there was like a period there where, like, I don't really. I was like in L.A. at that time when you guys were first starting to play those songs from Nothing Shocking. I had heard that you know, like everybody in rock and roll came out to see those shows. Like that when you guys got it together, that you were doing something that no one had heard before. Do you remember that time?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you remember having that impact on the scene?
Yeah, I do remember that, you know, a transition, I mean, let's face it, we're transitioning through time and we're setting this kind of like rhythm, or arc is a good word for you. And I did feel that we were causing, you know, let's just say the bow of the ship was causing rhythms to be ribboning off the side of the bow.
Sure.
As we were cutting through time.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, we were moving. And at that moment, I did feel that there was almost like a centrifuge around that time period and around Jane's addiction as well.
Yeah.
What we were up to, what we were doing, the messaging, the art, and art is a response to, let's face it, it reflects reality and it reflects its moment in history. So we were reflecting the Reagan era. We were reflecting the Bush era, and that was a very post-punk era.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, right.
And you'd done your time in punk as well.
Well, you came out of it. I came out of it. I was actually, I feel very fortunate because those humble beginnings where there was not too much light cast on that particular group, collective of people in Los Angeles. Predominantly, it was before Silver Lake became the hipster place.
Sure.
The LA Weekly was down there.
Yeah.
And it was just a jaunt off of downtown. I rehearsed in Silver Lake, but in the Philippine neighborhood, as my guitarist was a Philippine man, and my keyboardist was a Philippine woman.
For PSI?
Yeah, SICOM.
So you were doing, you know, straight up punk rock? What was the angle?
Yeah, it was, but it was post-punk. So where we were at, honestly, like, I learned from all the people that were already in the scene. And then you know what happened to me, Mark?
What?
I met this crazy girl, man. I loved her. I have to tell you, I fell in love with her. She was hot. Her name I won't tell you. But her mom was once the Canadian opera singer.
Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
Miss Canada.
Uh-huh.
Her father was an opera singer.
Huh.
Anyway, she wanted to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
But she was never going to be. You have to have so much. There's a lot that goes into being a great entertainer. Part of it is pure art. Part of it is pure desire. Part of it is pure. Do you have the stamina to keep a focus on a dream?
Mm.
Or are you full of shit?
Yeah.
Or are you, you know, you might be born pretty and your parents might be something.
Yeah.
But you don't have a drive.
Right.
And it takes all those things, and drive is a big factor. She didn't have drive, man. She was I call her type a hesher.
Uh-huh.
She loved to sit around and smoke pot and hold a bowl in her hand. She had long, beautiful, shiny brown hair.
But you loved her. Keeping her.
Yeah, I loved her because she was really beautiful. And that's the very first time I thought, you know, she wanted to be a singer.
Yeah.
And I could sing, right?
Yeah.
So this is what I would do. I rented out, for the very first time, a rehearsal studio.
Yeah.
Brought in tapes of my favorites, which was David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust. Yeah. I put it over the sound system and try to sing like David Bowie, see if I could, if I'm anywhere in the ballpark.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say, come on, we got to do this. And it was always, no, she's going to be drunk.
Yeah.
Or she's going to smoke.
Right. Yeah.
You know, she just, here's the thing. I say this, and I told this to my wife. She agrees with me. People kind of know their future. And so they might be behaving like, you know, you're wondering why they're behaving like this. I thought they wanted to be a singer.
Yeah.
I think in the back of her mind, she knows for what all of it is. And this is not to be an insult.
Yeah.
Sure. I know I'm not going to be able to be a singer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in 3 years, I'm going to look like this. Or in 3 years, you know, I'm just, they know.
Yeah.
They know. It's like something. Girls know the expiration. So do guys, you know.
Yeah.
There's expiration dates.
Yeah. But, you know, you've certainly put yourself through a lot over the years.
Yeah.
But you look great.
Thanks.
You landed on top, and, you know.
Well, yeah. I like to say, right now, yeah, I feel like I'm on top of it. Yeah.
And you guys, now, with the old band, are you guys friends?
You know, Jane's as it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I love those guys.
Who's in it now?
Well, Chris Chaney is in it now. And Chris and I are partners on the new project as well. In the way of
the Kind Heaven project.
Yeah, it's kind of like band leading.
Yeah. Are you and Dave all right?
Yeah.
Me
and Dave are fine. Yeah, we're doing great.
That's great. And you guys, like, you've gotten back together, you know, a few times, and are you touring now, or do you still with them?
Well,
sometimes.
See, I have a new project, the Kind Heaven.
Yeah, I listen to the record. It's great.
You listen to it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Who's playing guitar on that?
Well, I thought you would ask. Elliot Easton.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like on the, all the way through the record?
No.
Okay.
Not all the way through.
Who's on that first cut? That real hard rocker, almost like a punk tune.
That could be Phil X.
Uh-huh.
And Peter DeStefano.
Oh, yeah. If you've worked with him for a while.
Peter DeStefano is Porno for Pirates.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this, the record sounds great, but I know there's
And you know who played drums?
Who?
And did rhythms? Taylor Hawkins.
Who's he from?
Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah, that guy. He's great.
He is one of my dearest friends in the world.
Yeah.
Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, we're going to go and record more tomorrow, Etty and I.
Oh, yeah?
Over at Taylor. He is one of the most prolific writers right now in rock, you know, in music. Honestly, he just is, his mind loves music so much. He, you know, music now, you know, he's in the center where music gravitates around him. Really, he's like a gravitational force of music.
Yeah, as are you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the new, like I was talking to the publicist, now your wife, Etty is her name?
Yes, Etty.
Etty is involved in this Kind Heaven project, correct?
Yes, she is very involved. We sing.
Well, hold on, you want to get her in here?
Yeah, thank All you. Right. Thank you, that's very kind of you.
Etty.
So you're here now with...
Hey.
Perry Farrell.
You want Etty to come up? Yeah, do a musical interlude, Perry. Nice.
Yeah, good deal. Do you know you're off Dora?
That was Perry Farrell singing You Gotta Move by the Rolling Stones.
You got to move. You got to move. You got to move, child. You got to move. But when the get ready. You gotta move. Oh.
Come on in.
How, how.
Etty, welcome. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You can pull that mic in a little.
Yeah, do it, dear. Let's sing a little. Like,
okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going
to sing. No, you don't. You don't have to. Well, just you'll get your distance on the mic.
All right. I don't know.
That's perfect. That's it, right there.
So we were about to talk about the new thing.
Oh, fun. Like, good times.
Apparently. We talked about your kids. We talked about a little the 17-year-old. We got all that.
Oh, God. I actually got very good advice out there.
Really?
Yeah.
From the
take away his iPad.
No. They say that, you know.
Spank him.
Did he tell you that my son now won't come on tour?
Yeah, I heard that.
Well, they said, well, then let him stay, but make him present you with a plan. You can't just sit around for 8 weeks.
I was going to put him to work, Mark.
But
the jewelry store?
No. I was going to tell. Look, I tell him. Look, we have a family business.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Mm-mm, it can't be a family thing. Nothing related to us. He has to go out, find his own job.
Yeah,
get his job, present it to us, and we may say yes. But you're not going to sit around and do nothing for 8 weeks, and that's a privilege.
Well,
you
hey, man,
it.
It's worse than that. I mean,
what does he do on the road, though? I mean,
he has his little brother that I was hoping that they could.
Is
you know,
he?
Is he? Yes, yeah. I was hoping that there will be two of them and they can explore the city together.
Yeah. Whatever city you go to?
Exactly, like in Philadelphia, yeah. The Monument,
sure.
D.C.
No.
Well, no, a couple of years ago, they did go Pokemon Go. Is
oh,
that
right,
that game?
Right.
So
yeah,
they did do that. And I was hoping, and we're also bringing my loves of my life,
me?
My puppies on tour. So they would be responsible for taking care of them too. And it's really the last summer because he's going to be a senior next year.
And then you're going to lose him. He's going to go.
Yes. Well, I feel like he's going to go. But then a friend of ours said, well, they'll always come back.
Of course.
Because financially they're not.
Some money.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. A girlfriend of ours who's got children and she's a successful actress.
Yeah.
You probably know her. We won't say names, of course not. But her children, she said, she hears our stories, and her children are older.
Yeah.
So she said, don't worry about it.
They'll come back.
They'll come back. They need money.
Of course.
I said, how do you know they're going to come back? She said, how else are they eat?
Yeah, right. So this kind heaven thing, like I didn't realize it was, it's not just a record. It's a record recorded a specific way.
Oh, but we need to talk about that right now.
Yeah, okay.
So check it out, man.
Okay.
It is more than a record in that it is a concept. I'm trying to create a global community.
Okay.
Of people that are kind.
Yeah.
Do you know, random acts of kindness.
Yeah. And this type of thinking, it kind of started with Lollapalooza, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is a community event.
We need a place where we can celebrate where these moments are spiritual moments of enlightenment.
Yeah.
You can't learn about a soul when you're dealing with a soulless apparatus like a computer.
Sure.
You can only do that with another soul.
Yeah, and this is the Kind Heaven Orchestra.
Yeah, so this is what we're doing. We made a recording. Of the story. We'll call it a story.
Yeah,
it is an art project.
Yeah.
So this art project is multimedia.
Yeah.
Etty, who is an accomplished dancer, ballerina, is working as artistic director along with our friend Kevin Stay.
So we brought Kevin Stay in to help us.
Yeah.
Who has danced in the dance community, he's legend.
Yeah.
Working with and bringing in legends to work with us on.
Well, beyond the legend part, I was, you know, I know that, you know, when this
is so stylish.
It's more of the up and coming. They haven't quite gotten the day in the sun, but they're so brilliant.
Yeah.
But they just haven't quite gotten that shot yet.
These are dancers.
They're close.
No, these are.
They're crossing the threshold of
not
success.
Just dancers, but more like videographers.
Okay.
Or. Not producers, but photographers.
Choreographers, photographers, designers, clothing
media.
Designers, makeup artists.
And where's all this going to happen? How's this going to work?
Well, we're going to start. We have a tour coming up. We're starting in June with a residency at City Winery.
Yeah. Can we talk for a moment about City Winery? Because I promised I would talk about them for a moment. This is a nice
in New
time.
York?
In New York,
and
but
Boston,
also in Boston,
and I didn't realize and
there's more.
Over.
There's what Memphis
and Tennessee, yes,
and
Nashville,
also, and
in
Nashville,
Boston. I want to say
Atlanta.
I don't think so.
So that's an intimate room, though.
Right,
it's a great room to start, man. Because again, you see, I don't mind. I like the intimacy. What's happened is the intimacy's gone out.
The publicist told me about. You know, not only the orchestra and this sort of like happening that you're going to tour with, with all these different components.
Yes.
And
yes.
just sort of work it out live with audiences.
Right. Well, what we wanted to do is we have two different shows going on. Of course, there's the shows in the U.S. that's in a smaller venue. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to bring an element of immersive entertainment to it where there's interactions between not just on stage and the audience, but out in the foyer, out by the bar, there is entertainment out there, right? Is that what we're still going to do that?
Yeah, yeah. So here's how I like to play it.
Yeah.
I have been contacted by spirits before.
Yeah. What do they have to say?
They have a lot to say. No, actually, they don't have a lot to say, but they're very direct and to the point.
Yeah.
So that experience, I want to share, and I want to give other people that same experience. So I want to create an environment where we're all celebrating together and making music and making dance and making art, and there are spirits coming. There are spirits coming that lived and played music in the and danced at the Cotton Club, or they lived in Kansas City when jazz was first happening, and might have seen Charlie Parker, you know? And all these spirits are coming in, and then, you know, Warhol finds out about it, and Jim Morrison, and everybody's partying in dimensions. So, so what we want to do is, you know, they always say, when you're dealing with immersive theater, the trick is to never break the fourth wall, right?
Yeah.
Well, we are going to take the fourth wall and punch it in the face, and then not that wall goes down and we enter the fifth dimension.
Sure.
Or we don't enter it. We can go there and come back. We can jump across and come back. And that's the that is the environment. That's the scene we're trying to set.
Now, what is the what is this like, this media complex you was telling me about in Vegas?
Yeah, but I don't want to get to that yet.
Okay.
Because the environment. Yes. Let's go stick with this for a minute.
Stick with the spirits and environment.
Yes.
Fifth,
so what you're going to have
there,
you have a band, which is an orchestra.
Yeah.
The orchestra can do, you know, I'm starting it out, but I'm looking at it like old school Kansas City. You can beat my band.
Yeah.
You can come up and try. And we're going to get hot in that room, man. And it's going to have dancers in there.
And you can invite an ever-changing roster of musicians.
Yeah, you can come out.
Yes.
Yeah, with my guitar?
Yes.
Mark Maron, I now officially invite you to collude with Kind Heaven.
Okay.
Would you do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would be really, you have a nice voice. You kept your timbre in there. You're very good. I hear you're a musician.
Yeah, I can do it. I can do it. You just let me know.
I know you've got a sense of humor.
Yeah.
So I was really excited to meet you. But let's keep our focus on what that room looks like and feels like and sounds like.
Yeah.
So now we've got like great dress, man. People are gonna be dressing up to the nines, you know, and dancers that are accomplished and amazing.
Who's the core of the band? That you're going to be doing.
FT and I are the core of the band, and then Chris Chaney. Now we look at things like we are a collective,
right?
We are a group. All of us together are scene makers.
Yeah.
So once you're in the Kind Heaven Orchestra, you're in, you know, you're a member of the, and you're certainly a member of the Scene Makers Association or the SHMA.
Yeah, the SHMA, of course.
To hear.
So what's the end game?
The end game is I am looking to create and make a new scene, man.
Yeah.
Because what we're up to now is bottle service.
Yeah.
And that really,
No.
Yeah, you're shaking your head no. I'm shaking my head no. Etsy says no. Could we have bottle service at Kind Heaven? Sure. But we got to give them another reason.
Yeah.
And it's got to be exciting. Otherwise, you're going to stay on your iPad or your iPhone.
Because life.
And you'll never leave your damn house.
Life experience and life entertainment is the one thing that we still cannot duplicate.
Right.
In our house, even if you have virtual reality and whatnot. But there's nothing that compares to being there and experiencing it, right?
Of all your favorite things, Etty, what is it that you like to do aside from be with me?
Oh, my God. Cuddling with my dogs.
No.
I don't know.
No, you said it yesterday. I should have
What
whispered.
Did I say?
You said, you know, because somebody was asking her, what is your favorite thing to do in the world? And you said, I like to entertain live.
Oh, yes. Yes. No, he said, what is it I do best?
Yeah.
Meaning of all of my repertoires, I said, I like to entertain live. You know, I've clearly, you know, we've shot music videos. I've worked, you know, in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that compares to being live. I mean, it could be a vanity thing. I love instant gratification.
Yeah.
You love to have love. I will tell you.
It's fun to get the crowd going.
Her body is beautiful. It is truly a temple. And she's a great temple.
So this all sounds very exciting.
This is very exciting, and
you're going to hope that the performances of this stuff are going to be, you know, done like that, fully immersive. If you can pull it off with City Winery, you can be able to do
exactly. it. Exactly. So we're limited in, you wouldn't be out. You know, look at the tour dates. I would give you, some space to do anything. I have improvisational actors.
Yeah.
I have comedians.
Yeah.
I give them time on stage and off.
It's like a full-on variety clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with it.
Thank you.
It sounds very exciting.
Thank you.
It was exciting talking to you.
Yes, I think
this is probably be the first interview where we did not talk about Jane's addiction or porn.
Yeah, we did.
A little bit.
You asked me about the guys.
Yeah.
And I told you I love them.
Everybody's good.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds very exciting, and it's great talking to you too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Buster, what are you doing? All right, that was Perry Farrell. The new record, Kind Heaven, is available tomorrow, June 7th. Get it wherever you get music. Buster, stay out of the printer. This fucking cat, man. All right, look, I told you. All right, so Toronto pre-sale for JFL 42 is now until tomorrow. I'll be there September 19th. You can go to JFL42.com. You can go to WTFpod.com to get that link. The pre-sale is today, June 6th through 10 a.m. tomorrow, June 7th, when they go on regular sale. If you're able to get under the wire here and do the pre-sale, the password is 42, that's 42, comics. Okay? All right, I don't have time to play guitar today. I got to pack because I'm leaving for Vermont. But I'm already here. It's hard. It's hard to be in this space. I'm telling you. Boomer lives!